So 50 basis points was apparently the magic number that the stock market wanted to hear yesterday. The minute Jay Powell said 75 points was not being considered, the market took off. Meet Kevin was playing his Buy the Dip theme song. He mentioned jumping into the TQQQ. That is the triple leveraged NASDAQ ETF that returns three times the gain of the QQQ. Of course, we all had a chance to sleep on it, and overnight we realized that 75 basis points wasn't something we're expecting anyway. So the market is doing its thing this morning, which is an important reminder that the triple QQQ also returns three times the losses when the market's down. There are a bunch of these leveraged ETFs these days, both regular and inverse leveraged on just about everything from the S&P to the bond market. The experts tend to agree that these are high risk, highly volatile investments that have no place in the typical investor's portfolio. There are all sorts of warnings about holding them overnight and how volatility is going to destroy your long-term returns. But a few economists disagree and say that using leverage, especially early in a young investor's lifetime, can actually reduce their risk. They say that that's because it actually diversifies the risk across time. They say, they think about it this way. It would be really crazy if you were to only invest in the stock market for 1 year of your life, because that could be a really bad year. And because most investors have way less money to invest while they're in their 20s than they do when they're in their 50s, they're missing out on diversifying across time. So today on Dumb Money, we're going to dive into that theory and show you some data that we found on how leveraging would have worked out back testing all the way to 1885 to see if holding leveraged ETFs is crazy or actually a way to reduce risk over time. We are Dumb Money.
Three friends who turned $30,000 into $30 million using nothing more than Twitter and a zero commission trading account.
The suits that work on Wall Street, they call those people the smart money. That's not us.
Our goal is to help level the playing field for everyday investors.
We are Dumb Money.
Hey there, Dave here, along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money. Welcome to Dumb Money Live. A quick fun fact that I think deserves a smash to the like button. I mentioned data backtesting leverage. It compares two times, three times, and four times leverage and the effect of a typical ETF management fee on U.S. stocks all the way back to 1885, which seems to be a very important year in history because that is the year that Doc Brown helped Marty take a train ride back to the future. And it was also 3 years after the Dow Jones was founded and 11 years before they even published the Dow Jones Index, which was 12 companies at the time. So all of those fun facts together, I think, a long way of saying that I need you to hit the like button. Chris, Jordan.
Yeah, hit the like button, Dave. We can't dive into this topic without kind of talking about the history of this topic within our little friend group here. So yes. A few years ago, Dave came to us, and I think, like, I don't know, Dave was obsessed. Like, he would not stop talking about this for, like, weeks and weeks on end, and he basically came to us and said, hey, I've been doing research, and I think, this is Dave, and this is many years ago, I think the number one way to invest is through the triple leveraged, I don't know, SPY or I don't know what it was at the time.
At the time, it was the S&P 500, which I use UPRO as the leveraged ETF there.
What did I tell you, though? I said you're out of your freaking mind.
You did.
Like,
you said exactly what everybody says. Every economist, except, you know, this has fascinated me in my entire life. And my, just so for the record, my entire retirement account is in leveraged ETFs right now. And so I do want to talk about, we saw this study from actual economists that said it might actually reduce risk, which that immediately got my attention. And this is not a new study. It's actually from a book that was published in 2010. The book is called Lifestyle Investing, A New, Safe, and Audacious Way to Improve the Performance of Your Retirement. And back in 2010, leveraged ETFs weren't as common as they are today. So all of their research was based on using margin. And they ran the numbers of 130 years of stock data. And they found that two times leverage reduced your lifetime risk by about 20%. And they say that it beats traditional strategies in every historical 45-year span, which is basically every working life. So who ended up being right?
Okay, so Dave, let's just say this is a super, super controversial topic.
Yes.
It's a topic that very few people actually want to dig deep on. In fact, I read an article last night while preparing for this episode that blew my mind, because this article essentially said that this was a way to essentially completely destroy your wealth. And you know, it was one of those articles, right? And I read the article, and nowhere in the article did it cite any data at all. It literally just used the theoretical concept of, like, I think they call it fee drift and churn drift.
Volatility
but
decay.
List the data. And I've spent many hours preparing for today's episode. Look, and we found a bunch of studies. Some of them are old. I found an amazing Seeking Alpha article. I don't know. You can read the title of it if you recall. But and the comments in that Seeking Alpha article, I don't know when it was from, of people that have tried to do the deep dive research and actually recreate using transaction cost, going back. You know,
well, they also look at the margin fees, right? So they look at, you know, what it would have cost to borrow on every single, like, is granular.
This was not margin fee. Not the Seeking Alpha article. It was.
No, I'm talking about this 2008 study by Yale, which is probably the land breaking. This is the de facto study you need to look at if you're going to seriously consider doing something.
Well, I think you also need to look at more, like, the analysis that this recent article did, not that I agree, really took more into accounted for both the management fees and what they believe would be the internal transaction fees of the derivatives that are constantly being purchased. Okay. And there's, by the way, you can go down a wormhole and spend years of your life on this research, because there's so many factors to consider when you're trying to essentially determine if the fund could completely go bust and what it would take for the fund to go bust, and what is the statistical likelihood that at some point over your investment horizon, let's just say it's somewhere between 10 and 30 or 40 years for this use case, what is the statistical risk that the methodology would cause you to lose all of your money or most of your money at any point, or you have to lose all of it, like at any point during that time, or towards the ending period to lose most of it, because then it would be all, you know, kind of irrelevant.
Well, and that's what the authors of this 2010 book say. They say use more leverage early in your life and wean yourself off of leverage later, so that you're basically spreading out a larger investment in the market for the entire life instead of starting low. Because when you're in your 20s, you don't have any money to invest, and when you're, you know, retired, you have a lot of money to invest. So try to front load some of your investments to take advantage of time.
Well, they like it to investing in real estate too, right? Because you don't invest in real estate just by paying straight up cash for the value. You leverage into any sort of investment like that. And so why wouldn't you just leverage into the stock market as well? It's just another asset class. It's another factor exposure, right?
But for some reason, leveraging into equities has always had this kind of negative connotation. Like, it's too risky to leverage into equities, but leveraging into your house is okay.
So also, in alignment with this theory or this strategy would be Nassim Taleb's, for those of y'all haven't read Black Swan, highly recommend reading Black Swan by Nassim Taleb, would be his equity barbell kind of thesis, which is that you should not invest in the middle being kind of bonds and balanced, expensive types of fee-driven assets, that you instead should basically sink all of your money at the very ends, meaning the highest growth you can possibly get in the market, the most aggressive equity growth strategy on one end, and on the other end, essentially be in treasury bills, okay? So, and then everybody has their own kind of balance for 50-50, 90-10, something in between. But this goes along with that if you wanted to use this theoretically, I guess, as the tool on the aggressive end, right? And what blew me away with that study, not yours, Jordan, but Dave's, that he circulated to us yesterday, was that they actually did really amazing analyses on the perfect amount of leverage to get the maximum benefit with a relatively low likelihood, right, of losing your money. Because if you put too much leverage in, like 4x leverage, you're going to actually perform worse and have a chance. I think it's even likely. Is it likely that you will literally lose all your money at 4x? But at 3x, they could not find a time when you would lose your money entirely. And over a long period of time, I think the best graph I saw, Dave, in that study was in modern markets, 1950 to 2009 or 2010, whenever they ended it, in modern markets, I think you, by investing 3x leverage, you essentially double, you double your returns, right, over the course of that period. And that's a really big period, 1950. Yeah.
That's that right, top chart there. The S&P 500, 1950 through 2009, you see the 1x leverage or zero leverage is coming in between at about 7%, and 3x leverage is at 14%.
Well, but 4x leverage isn't much worse either.
It's not on that one, but you see some of these other ones, like the Dow 30 from 1928 to 2009, goes negative if you went to 4x leverage.
But Dave, so, this you're not.
But,
is
but
this
1928 isn't modern,
fees?
And that's what I think you're trying to say.
Where is the dotted line that then factors that into a zero fee? I thought that was super cool.
There it is.
Because it,
so
you
that's,
might have
that,
to go
this
little,
is the 1885 through 2009, which
one.
Is kind of ridiculous
go
to
down.
Even think about. You know what was trading the 12 companies on the stock market back then.
That's
but this
it,
is right. The S&P 500 modern times 1950 through 2009. The dotted line shows after fees, and the solid line is based on leverage from zero leverage across this bottom axis, zero leverage to 4x leverage, and it maximizes there at 3x leverage.
But
and
what they're saying
even after
is,
fees, there's it's still higher than, obviously higher than the 1x leverage and higher than 2x leverage as well.
I mean, these are, listen, guys, we, to be very clear, we've just been analyzing studies, other people's research. It's a topic we've been fascinated with, Dave especially, for years. Now I'm fascinated with, because I blew him off. But I shouldn't have blown you off, Dave. I shouldn't have. And I think the fact that I blew
well,
you off.
I think that you probably also know that I've been fascinated with the idea of the double your money after every losing bet on a roulette wheel, which I thought I invented, but I was doing some research on that too. And that's actually a common betting system that was established in the 18th century France. It's a martingale betting system based on probabilities that you'll not lose money, because flipping a coin, you're only going to get hit tails a certain number of times. Okay.
Yeah.
Continue.
By the way, we will put a link, Dave. Will we not put a link to this study?
I'm going to put a link to all of these studies in the description.
All.
The one that okay. I just showed on the screen with those pretty charts and graphs, the article from Time Magazine from 2009 that references the book, a link to the book itself, which I haven't read, but the summary is enough for me.
Before we go
and,
further,
and then also the 30-page study, a PDF that Jordan, I'm sure has read. It's like
half of it. That's about all I could get through last night.
Okay, Jordan, before you tell us your perspective on that particular study, I want to remind everyone we're not financial advisors, and by this episode especially is super controversial topic. We're analyzing this just like you guys. Likely will, who are watching this today. We're not saying to do any of this. We just think it's a fascinating topic, because if the data is correct, like, I can't imagine not taking a part of my portfolio going forward from this day, especially where we are in the market today, where as much as down.
And 23% down in the triple Q. How far down are we in the T triple Q, Dave?
The T triple Q today, let's pull up a stock chart here.
So do not take this as financial advice, because it is absolutely not. We're going through this research just like you guys are. Everyone needs to figure out, you know, their own decisions.
So from that high yesterday to the low today, that is
it's
15%
today. We know that. But overall, from the tippy top,
from the tippy tippy top. Yeah, let's pull this back. Why is my date here? Let's pull it back here to a year. There's the. Is that the tip? Did I already draw that?
Yeah.
November. Okay. So that graph. Where are you? Oh, there it is. It's 58% down. Yes.
Hurts a donut.
And yeah, I will share with you my personal experience with this, and how theoretically I should have made a lot more money than I actually did. And this is something that I want to warn Chris about if he's actually considering doing this.
Really?
Is you can't get nervous. You can't freak out. And close this position. Also, I would highly recommend not doing it in a taxable account, because you potentially have a huge tax bill. I'm doing it in my IRAs, and I actually took the pullback in the market as an opportunity to realize, oh, well, my account is worth a lot less now than it was 6 months ago. And so I converted, I did a backdoor Roth IRA conversion on that new lower amount that I'll be paying taxes on but now to a Roth IRA so that I won't pay taxes on it. But just some quick math. The QQQ was up 138% from the 2020 low until that tippy top high. And three times that would have been 414% of the QQQ. That's pretty insane. But the TQQQ was actually up 930%. So that volatility slippage that they talk about actually works the other way too. It works in your favor when it's going up. So instead of a 3X would have been 414. It was 138, so 3X would have been 414, but it was actually up 930%. And then when the QQQ dropped 22%, the TQQQ didn't actually drop roughly when it dropped about 22%. It didn't drop 66, but it dropped only 58. So there's actually, you're not actually getting that slippage and volatility crush that I've been warned about in the examples that we've seen.
I just put on a trade. That is
okay.
Insane.
Drum roll. I used to have a button called Instant Trade Alert.
Do you want to know what I do? Do you want to know what I just did?
Yes.
Let's see if it works. Let's see if I'm just listen. I'm doing this for
options?
The community.
Did you buy call options on the T triple key?
I just bought weekly call op. No, oh, no. 2 weeks out. 2 weeks out. Call options
so
on the T
on the amount of leverage in that.
Okay, so actually,
no, Jordan, I bought them on margin. That's the best part. So I just bought on margin call options on the triple leverage TQQQ.
That makes me so nervous on so many levels for you. But I know you can afford it. And that's why I think the continuation of that disclaimer you were giving is our risk tolerance is very different than yours. You are a gambling addict. You are a degen, as they say in the Web3 world.
No.
I will say, though, that I actually used options on, I believe it was the S, whatever the short version of the UPRO is, the SPXU, I believe, back in the 2020 days. And I found that actually just buying the SPXU, I think that's was more efficient than the options on it, just because of the premium there.
Call options, by the way, these are call options, but it's not enough to where it's going to destroy me. I put it on because it's the last thing that anybody would ever consider doing right now. So let's do it and see how it works out. Yeah. The reality is, here's why I did it. I did it because after doing all of my research on this particular strategy, Dave, I admit that it will never know for sure because there's always we don't know what we don't know. We don't know if the market's going to react even worse than it has over the past 70 years, right? There could be something catastrophic, some tail risk in this that we're not factoring in. There's always tail risk with a triple leverage, right? Anything. But I do want to start to employ the strategy. However, I do not want to put a lot of money behind the strategy today because I do think there is tremendous tail risk in the market over the next few weeks and months. But I'm going to put the trade on through this option because the most I'm going to lose on this option is $20,000. Okay,
yes. You've capped your losses. That's one of the upsides to using options is you have limited your downside risk to all of your money.
But if the market flips back here, even temporarily, like I want to get in on this trade. I'm just not prepared to get in quite on it yet. So it's a tactic, okay? But Jordan, what did your study say? Wasn't your study more about the way to really maximize this strategy is to continue to dollar cost average in over time?
It basically says the same thing, right? And so the deal with it is that it's not looking at a situation like ours, but maybe a more typical situation where you're consistently putting in. And it's the same thing. You want to leverage your money when you don't have a lot, right? And then you want to scale it back. And so I bet that these two studies kind of worked off of each other. This one's earlier, it's 2008. So I bet the 2010 study, used this as a basis for some of the opinions that they have. It didn't go as far as like figuring out what level of, leverage is the right level, but it basically came to the same conclusions. It did look at a few different strategies and they said that basically you could, the idea was that you could retire about 10 to 15 sooner by employing this strategy than you could by just investing traditionally.
Yeah, and we're not kidding. This is probably the world's largest, longest study on the matter, and it is dense and difficult to read.
Yeah. You know, but, so interestingly enough, I think, so there are two people that, so Piton Gaines actually quoted this study in a tweet that he put out in January, maybe. And I think this study is referenced in a really good book, which is The Psychology of Money, by Morgan Housel. His problem with things like this is that he can't does this. And I think that that's a big factor you've got to give yourself is, can you actually employ this strategy when you're getting hammered like you would be, right? And
yeah. So, yeah, because Jordan,
in 2008,
when the market for a very short period of time was down, was it down 45%? Does that sound correct?
I think 45 to 50%.
Yeah. What?
46,
yeah, roughly. Yeah, so almost 50%. So you're in a triple leverage ETF and the market's down 50%. And by the way, I think most of us don't really understand how these triple leverage ETFs work, because if you think about it, you might think that that means you go broke, but that's not what happened, right? So it's not the triple leverage ETF, even in a 50% drawdown, 46% drawdown, didn't lose all of its value in 2008. And at that point in time, I think it was down 70. Was it down 70%, Dave? Is that about right?
I'm seeing this is the SPY. It was down 54%, and I'll pull up.
There you go.
Well, I don't. Did we have a UPro back then?
I think they did the analyses.
As if it had existed that long ago.
And I want to say, I believe they said it was down 70%. So here's the thing, guys. When you're down 70%. In your portfolio, that is a really difficult thing to wrap your head around staying in, because you're preparing that. You're like, I can't go broke, right? So you really can't do this with money that you absolutely 100% need to survive, because you won't have the mental and psychological willpower to remain in the trade. But as we all know, historically, at least as a historical precedence in our lifetimes, anytime the market has had a massive major move like that, it has rebounded just as sharply, right?
Yeah,
just as sharply,
absolutely.
Whether it's institution or not. So that would be the worst point to get out of that ETF, because that ETF explodes back on the upside, right? And the reason why I'm interested, there's two reasons why I'm interested in Dave's strategy of this triple leverage concept. The first reason is I believe that the government has shown us over the pandemic that they are willing to step up in kind of worst case scenarios, even to the point of buying equity, okay? Which is what we saw during the Trump administration. So that leads me to believe if I'm going to have that type of backstop, which is the number one concern with a triple leverage ETF, that adds a layer of comfort. The second thing is a bit more broad-based kind of thesis over the next few decades. But we talked about this in the show many times. I do believe that the next two decades will be the decades of automation, robotics, and artificial intelligence. I believe it will be equivalent, and decentralization maybe, but I think it will be the equivalent to the internet revolution, and before that, the industrial revolution. I think we just can't see it right now because we've been working on the technology for so long, investing in it so long, but we haven't really seen the fruits of all that labor yet. I think it's coming. I don't know when, but the next couple decades.
Yeah.
I think the beneficiary of that is enterprise. It's enterprise. And what that means is that we'll see the fruits of that come out in the equity markets. I just don't know how soon and when it's going to happen. So if I believe that, I believe that the markets generally over the next 20 to 25 years will probably see something similar to what we saw the last 25 years, if not even better. And that, if I'm correct, with some major drawdowns, of course, that would lead me to believe that this is a great strategy, right?
Because let's talk about those drawdowns in a second, but I do also want to remind everyone to subscribe, because we will be doing a full episode on the best ways to invest in the thesis of robotics and automation taking over the world and what that means for the stock market. So we are going to do that episode. Subscribe if you haven't already. And AI.
Yeah.
AI. The whole, you know, replacing humans doing things with machines and computers doing. Now, I do want to share my personal experience with drawdowns and UPro stock. I started doing this back in summer of 2019, Chris, you'll probably remember. And in a little over 6 months, I was up 30%. which I'm like, boom, this is amazing. Even with these drawdowns, it's amazing. We're going to keep moving through time. This line here is where I happen to move from one broker to another, and so that's where my record keeping is. It makes it very difficult to keep track of this when you've moved your account from one to the other. But you see, it kept going up until COVID hit. And you see this dramatic drop-off, and that red line is where I got nervous and I unplugged the money printer, right?
Oh, and Dave!
I unplugged. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to let it recover. And then this green line is when I got back in. So, you know, I actually, you know, got out high, bought low. That seems good so far. Yeah. But the market keeps going, and I got nervous again and got out. After you see that, Dave.
Why would you get out there, Dave?
Do you see that dip? It doesn't really look big on this chart, but it's like a day like today where they're saying it's the worst day since 1987 or something, right? And I just freaked out and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stay out of this strategy for a little bit because we kept hearing the word unprecedented and I hadn't heard the word that many times in my life.
CNBC,
so I just got out.
CNBC
ruined this for me. So let's just watch what happened. I got out and okay, it went up and then down and then up. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should get back in. Well, it just keeps going up. But this is summer and you know how I'm on vacation and not really paying attention to the markets, sell in May and go away. So this next line is where I finally said, okay, it's late August. I'm getting back in. But I didn't get back into the UPRO, so I can't continue it on this chart. That's when I bought TQQQ. But you know that it outperformed this the S&P over this time frame. But you can see that even right after I got in, it immediately goes down. It does every time, right? TQQQ even more exaggerated. Up and then down and then up and then down. So I'm basically kind of break even from August through November. And I stayed in. And it just kept going up and up and up. But then, you know, what goes up must come crashing down, which the TQQQ went down faster and harder, as we all know, than the S&P. So that is how I took a perfect strategy that had I not done anything, I would have made good money. I would have had just insane returns. Just for rough math, if you had put $10,000 into the TQQQ on January 1st, 2020, before anyone had heard of COVID, and you just left it in, COVID would have knocked that 10 grand down to 4 grand. But if you had held on and not did what I did, you didn't paper hands, while the money printer was buzzing, you would have turned you got that 4 grand back to 10 grand by June, and then its all-time high, it would have been worth $30,000. Of course, if you kept holding now, that 30 would be worth 18, but 18 is still, you know, that's what, a 80% gain in less than 2.5 years, even through this crazy turmoil, up until today with today's recent pullback, 80%, 2.5 years.
Dave, what a roller coaster. You know, I think that what makes people nervous about this strategy, just investing in the market right now, is we have become brainwashed by macroeconomic trade thesis that everything is about the money printer, right? Because that's a lot of new investors, especially, that's all we've heard about since you know the pandemic because it's been the biggest storyline. We printed more money than we have in history, and that's what led to this insane bubble. And now the bubble's burst, and now we can't print any more money. Now we're taking off, so now we're going to get equally screwed. And all that is totally true, but there is something that does exist behind the money printer, right? And people don't understand that before that was a reality, before when that used to just be a blip on the radar, like tiny bits of money printing, right? Every once in a while. Like there were actual times where massive innovation exploded valuations of all the world's industries, right? Called it the one that happened in our lifetime, at least, because we were, you know, in our 20s, was the internet revolution. And before the internet revolution, it was the technology revolution, right? And, but you know, we weren't really around in the industrial revolution, but that's what it was then. Again, I firmly believe that at some point in time, I don't know when, we will get back to fundamentals, right? And the truth is, innovation drives everything. Productivity, market efficiency, it drives everything, right? And like, I do have faith that we're making the right investments now, that this money isn't completely going to waste. You know what I'm saying? Like, where did most of the money go? It's nobody talking about the fact that most of the money, now a lot of it's gone to junk, of course, but a lot of it has also gone into enterprise, innovation, startups, ventures. Most of it's wasted. Most of it's wasted, but so much cool stuff is happening. And like, we're seeing stuff behind the scenes as early stage investors that is simply mind-blowing, like simply mind-blowing. And especially with artificial intelligence, I can't stop thinking about companies that are employing tens and tens and tens of thousands of employees to basically just do administrative work. And Jordan and I are investing in an old employee of ours. I won't give out what they're doing exactly because I don't want to give that away, but they basically are using artificial intelligence to, in some cases, reduce what could be hundreds of thousands of employees from certain industry sectors by removing all of that administrative work. And like, it's and that's just one little tiny startup.
Or just reducing it and making it less mundane and reducing the amount of time these people have to spend. But it makes it more efficient, so it's great.
Yeah, it makes it more efficient. And that's where value is created. But the only value that's created in that little cycle is not for individuals, unless you're invested in assets that are participating, either that are benefiting directly, either the company that's developing it or all the many companies and sectors that are benefiting from that technology, benefiting from that artificial intelligence. I just went to Dave and Buster's yesterday, guys, first time post-pandemic with my kids. We surprised them after school, right? And I walked in, and you know, Jordan, you've probably been to Dave & Buster's in the last few of your kids, right? They have that big booth when you walk in. No?
I don't go to Dave & Buster's. Are you kidding me? No.
Pre-pandemic. Okay. My kids love it, dude. So we walk in, they have that huge like front counter where they have three employees that are selling you the cards and swiping your credit cards and then giving you a receipt and putting money on your cards. They just took it away. It's gone. Now you just walk in and walk into the game area and you find a kiosk and it's all computerized. Nothing crazy, nothing special. We're seeing this at McDonald's. We're seeing it everywhere. We know that when we order food at McDonald's now, sometimes the person speaking to us is in another state, okay? Eventually, I have news for you. It's not going to be a person. It's going to be artificial intelligence speaking to you, assuming that we even still allow you to speak in, right? But like, if you are speaking to it, it'll be artificial intelligence speaking back to you, assume, you know, verifying your order, right? And no employees doing that. This is happening in every industry sector, and we're just scratching the surface. In fact, teaser for next week, we have a high conviction trade episode coming next week. I teased it in my tweet. So go to @ChrisCamillo on Twitter if you want to see the image of where I was when I was in the process of researching this high conviction. So, and it has to do with innovation, quite simply. But if you don't believe in that, if you
to
don't
me,
believe...
it looked like you were researching equipment for opening a new Quiznos.
Maybe. We'll see. But if
and what is that face? I that's what I wanted to ask you, is what is going on here? Is that your YouTube thumbnail face?
You sure not just creeping on that young lady that's behind you?
That's Brenna. That's our events manager at our restaurant. No, she's one of the managers at Chelsea in the background. So that gives you a little bit of a hint as to where we were and what we were doing. But if you don't believe in that, what I just said, then this might not be, you might not want to be levered. You might not even want to be in the equity market, right? But
yeah, this is a super high risk thing, and I can't bring myself to do it in my normal account, but I think of my retirement account as like, if all else fails, I might need that money, but I don't really plan to need that money. And so let me just try to go crazy, get as much return as I can on it and not pay taxes.
By the way, are saying this all leads to UBI. I want to do an entire episode on UBI because it's kind of political. I think UBI, universal income, basic income, whatever it's, I think it's inevitability. Whether we like it or not, whether we think it's the right thing to do or not, yeah. I'm not even getting into that political conversation. I'm just saying UBI is a matter of when, not if. I am confident.
And I agree. I agree with you on that. Not on so, whether we need it or not, but just that's the direction. It may be during our lifetimes. It may be in the next 100 years, in the next 200. It's going to happen at some point.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, well, I want to say this. We're not fighting the Fed here. By the way, I'm not putting this strategy on yet, guys. I literally dabbled with a little option today just in case. But we are doing the research now because this is a strategy we think we want to employ. I want to employ it at some point in the near to mid kind of future, right? Like in the next few weeks to many, many months down the road. I'm not ready to employ it yet. In fact, my entire portfolio is partially hedged with a short interest on the SPY and the QQQ right now, right? So I'm not saying that I want to fight the Fed. I'm just saying at some point, and it's very hard to pick the bottom, as we all know, very hard. I'm usually a little late to pick the bottom, but I'd rather be, you know, just a little late, but still not, you know, at some point you got to pick the bottom and not be afraid it could go lower, right? I like the strategy, man, and I'm going to employ it. I'm going to do it. Dave, I'm so pumped about this because, I mean, look how high we are still, right? Look how high we are.
Yeah, and this goes back to 1994, so you can see how big those other dips were. And that's just on a normal scale. If we put it on a log scale, you can see we're not that... It seems so painful. Like, seeing my portfolio balance every day just makes me want to, like, crawl under a rock and never look at my portfolio again, which is probably the best thing I could do. But yeah.
We don't know the damage yet from the money print cycle. We still don't know how deep the pop is to be. Like, we don't know. Nobody really knows. But I think, guys, the worst thing about this is that we have multiple things happening at the same time. This is not all about inflation. It's about a combination of inflation plus massive supply chain issues happening at the same exact time, right? So, like, if we can kind of imagine a scenario where the inflationary fear, because it's all fear, right? If it just starts to level off at some point in the next year, let's just say, and then imagine at that same period of time, supply chain starts to get just a little bit better. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, like it's going back to where it was 3 years ago. I'm just saying, what if these things start to level off? We know the market looks forward. I also think election cycle, as scary as the election cycle is for everyone because there's uncertainty, I feel that election cycle coming up in early 24, I know it's a little bit away, is going to force this administration to be friendlier when it comes to the Fed and the market, because they can't have a down market that year. We wouldn't be saying this 12 years ago because politics didn't care that much about it, right? Now, politics just plays into everything. So we know what's going to happen, right? The political landscape is going to cater to the market because they can't have a bad economic cycle going into election year. So I think that plays into Fed policy. I think supply chain has to get better. How could it get worse than right now? It can't possibly get worse than right now, right? Yeah. China's still shut down due to the pandemic. It's crazy. At some point, they're going to reopen up because they need to. They want to, and they need to. And by the way, don't you think we have great antivirals? We have all that. We know all the stuff. Unless we have some weird strain that comes out of nowhere that's like completely, you know, non-stoppable with all the tools that we have in our toolkit now. How do we not get better with supply chain?
So, Chris, let's talk about this—the idea of when to even consider getting into a leveraged ETF position. Because right now, we can't pick the bottom. Should I get on the sidelines again and not be in my triple leverage position? Because we know I got burned the last time I did that. But it seems like we might have more down days than up days, and that is the thing that over time deteriorates your capital in this type of a investing scheme. And that's really what it is. It's a scheme.
Oh, by the way, yeah, thanks, Parrot Trader. European war. Forgot about that one, man. Like this is bad. The macro is bad. And it's so bad, right? Dave, I don't know. I think, what if you don't have to choose? What if you just dollar cost average in over time? I know you're already in it, so it's a harder decision for you, but for people like me, what if I just kind of slowly over the next 6 months just kind of put a little bit from my unlevered portfolio or negatively levered portfolio into this, and as I come out of that, you know, I'm so leveraged all the time anyway in a long market, it almost doesn't matter for someone like me, but for someone that's wants to do this, I would say no. Maybe it's a mental
thing,
right?
Not someone, me.
Like,
what should I do?
I don't know. I don't know what you should do. I don't know. I just think this is worthy of conversation. And if there are smart people watching today, read these studies and spend some time on it for yourself, because it's not about a decision that you make this year. This is a multi-decade decision. This is the type of thing that, if the data is correct, and you employ this strategy, if the data is correct, and if you don't have a black swan scenario that is something that looks to be materially worse than we've seen in the last 72 years, right? In that scenario, it appears to me, at least, like this could be, I think, game-changing decision to be in something like this, because it would theoretically double your annual returns. Oh my God, that's,
or triple. Triple.
No. The data, no. The triple leverage says the data will double, not triple, because of the both the fees, the transaction cost, all the negative stuff. So you gotta be in the triple, I guess.
You have to be in the triple to get closer to a double.
To a
after,
double. But Dave,
the compounding effects of all of
a double after fee. That's, you know how insane that is.
Doubling a market that historically just goes up. We have big down pulls, you know, big pullbacks, but over time, over any 45 year, this is what that one study said, over any 45 year period, being 2x leverage comes out ahead of being just a traditional investor.
It's worthy of conversation. It's worthy of research. It's worthy of people's time to look at it, consider it, debate
so
it.
I'm gonna as soon as this is done, we're gonna I'll link that in the description. You guys go to the comments of this video just to give us your thoughts. I'm very curious as to what everyone's thought, because this is one of those things where opinion matters, because there's no right answer.
Yeah,
and I'm sure someone will have the right answer. But
yeah, Dave, I think there's no right answer, but there is a lot of research, if you're willing to read through it, and the research seems pretty good to me. I mean, I know people are trying to poke holes in it, but I haven't seen anyone be able to poke a hole in it yet. And it really is insane that the media is talking about this stuff, just uneducated. Like, it's crazy. And that's where the opportunity is, because if everybody were doing it, I don't know, like, would it... Weird to me.
Well, that's why you shouldn't really take advice from the right.
But so, even, of course not, Jordan.
Because they're not
absolutely.
I mean, they're
not.
Just trying to get clicks and views and things like that.
Yeah.
And so if somebody's advertising clicks and views, you can listen to what they're saying, but they're not the ones to take advice from.
But timeline matters, of course. I think Talon Gates, great point.
Now we've heard of the inverse Kramer index. Is there a triple leveraged inverse Kramer index that we could find?
Yes. I think, for me, I'd like to believe I'm still on a 30 plus year. I hope I'm trying to be healthy with my life. I like to believe I'm still in a 30 plus year time horizon for my investments, so I can strongly consider something like this. So, and I am. And if I ever get lazy and I'm not willing to stock pick anymore, but I still am greedy and I want outsized returns, like, I feel like that's you, Dave, sometimes.
That was my
sometimes.
Argument all along. Like, you spend so much time and effort researching and trying to find and winning on some and losing on others, and you're net, you paid a lot of taxes on the winners. You, like, wouldn't it just be easier to put it on autopilot? And we know that historically the S&P does 10-ish percent on average over long periods of time. What, could we just do 30 and
20.
Call it a day?
20, Dave. Well,
so John
20,
McCravey
or
just
more.
Said research is likely done during a bull market. We're likely in a bear market right now. So the paper that I've got, I think they went back into like the 1860s. And even though these products didn't exist, you know, they estimate what it would have been like and what the borrowing rates were and all of those things. And so it's over a span of, you know, a really long time, over 100 years.
Yeah, and I think that those results are a little less relevant than more modern times. Because
it's tough, right? It's tough.
Since the 1929 era, right, we've had a very different looking market. We've had a different Fed. We've had, you know, the 50s on, or a lot of the studies I was reading were based on 50s through 2009. I haven't really found anyone talking about this since about 2010, which is interesting.
But Dave, that study that ended in 2009 was interesting. Like, you got the 2008 in there, which is super important, right? Like, super important. Without getting 2008 in there, it's kind of worthless, right? So 2008 was a big deal. big deal. And by the way, there's, I'll remind everyone, there is black swan tail risk in the market, even with governments trying to support things. We have no idea what is going to happen in the next 30 years. We could have a 70% market drop issue. And I think, I want to say at 70%, this thing completely pummeled and could be at risk.
It's, in but again, the, you're, not, but putting, you're again, not putting a portion of your net worth that you would not gamble with. You're doing
yeah, but
this
Dave, also,
with your highest
I saw
risk
that
portion of your portfolio.
In the comments of the Seeking Alpha article, I recommend everyone read the Seeking Alpha article and then look in the comments. Because the comments, there was a guy that did a bunch of research, and there was a debate going back and forth. And he claimed that he did the math, and because of the way the derivatives work, in a short, very short-lived 70% draw, 70% market crash, that this only lost 74%. He said it was very weird to me. I didn't understand, or maybe it was. I don't understand how that's possible. But he did the math, and there was some debate around it. Smarter people than me should look into this. But I like the risk reward. I do like the risk reward based on the data for someone that doesn't want to spend a tremendous amount of time stock picking. Now, I'll probably be the guy that's going to just stock pick forever, and then I'll lever in on those stock picks. So, you know, this probably won't be a big part of my portfolio, but I kind of want to do it as a social or an economic experiment. I just want to have it.
That's what I thought of it as. Play with my retirement accounts, because that is, I'm really hoping that I don't need my retirement accounts.
So I haven't spoken to you two guys yet. I want to tease something for next week. I'm trying to coordinate this for next week. But we're going to do a Dumb Money Twitter Spaces, assuming that you guys are available next week. That
I will be in Disney until Wednesday.
A guy who basically is the grandfather of venture capital. And I sat in on a private Zoom session. This person started one of the very first venture capital funds, I don't know, 70 years ago. That grew into a $60 billion fund. I won't give out his name now. Maybe I will. Alan Patrickoff. And he, I have never been so blown away by an individual. And I was just like, we got to get this guy either on the show or on Twitter Spaces. I think Twitter Spaces might be the right place rather than having him on the show. But if you want to have him on the show, we can do that too. Fascinating story. He is in his 80s. He's in his 80s, and he works harder than any of us still. He just opened up a new fund, right? His third fund, raised $50 million for it. And his fund is focused on publicly traded companies that are focused on, I forget what he calls it, basically this generation of older people, like really older, like age 60 plus. And that's all they invest in. And he has a really strong thesis around it. And dude, I'm telling you, the stories he can tell you. I think a lot of our community has an interest in the other half of what we do, but we don't really talk about it on Dumb Money Live because we're focused on public markets. And that's why that would be a better Twitter Spaces than a YouTube show. But follow the Dumb Money Live Twitter account. Is it dumbmoney.tv?
It's dumbmoney.tv. @dumbmoneytv. There's a fake account that has a dot in there. Don't follow that one.
Because I promise you guys.
Go to dumbmoney.tv, the internet website, dumbmoney.tv, to find all of our actual socials, because there are a lot of spoofers out there trying to rip people.
He just wrote a book in his 80s called No Red Lights, and that's what he kind of, you know, turned it for. But we'll do that Twitter Spaces next week.
That sounds good. I also need to remind every single person watching right now that I know that 2/3 of you have not hit the like button. I'm able to do that math in real time. So come on, everybody. Let's hit the like button.
Let's leverage
a big flurry of likes.
Leverage it 3x.
Let's leverage that thumbs up. All right. Everything else good? You seem like you're having some difficulties there, Chris. He's just falling apart.
Classic. Well, he can't hear you right now because his earpiece is...
He can't get it to work either. All right. That's going to do it for this one. We are Dumb Money. We will see you next week.